a new topic, different topic. I found this newsletter on the government site called Equality
Matters.
And their mandate is to essentially ensure that there's sort of wage parity between women and men in Canada, and that they've got some action points that they had set out for themselves over the past year. And so this newsletter kind of recaps what their success stories are in terms of the year in review for 2023. And I thought that we would just have a conversation about some of these things, because it's great, but as always, there's always a ways to go, and how we can maybe identify some of these ways to goes. So one of the things that they're excited about is that it's the 5th anniversary for the Department of Women and Gender Equality Canada, which is kind of a big deal when I think of, there used to be a department, the Department of Status of Women or something, and it went the way of the dodo bird. I'm not sure how long ago, and it was quite devastating, actually, for a lot of women at the time, because it sort of upheld the women's voice within the politic of Canada, and everybody wondered, well, what the heck, now that the Status of Women Canada is disappeared, who's going to take up the helm there and be the voice for these equity and equality issues. So the fact that it's been around for 5 years, I think is indeed something to celebrate. Part of what it makes me think of, though, is, there's been some MPs, not necessarily just in 2023, but women leave politics because it's a harsh environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that discussion that we were just having about Barbie happens on the political stage.
Mm-hmm.
It happens on all the stages. And if we don't get beyond having those kinds of incidences and those kinds of conversations, right, we're not going to see more women in politics and rising to the level of a senator, or really taking on portfolios that make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Not a heck of a lot's going to change.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that women in politics are reported on are very different as well. I can use a few examples from the UK and New Zealand. I just know a little bit more about there, but we had prime ministers in the UK. Theresa May was one of the more recent female prime ministers, and the headlines that she would get were just so silly. Like, there was always something about what she was wearing. Who the hell would read anything about what a male prime minister is wearing? I don't think I've ever seen an article on that. And there's just a tendency to focus on
the appearance
for some reason. The other one that I thought was hilarious in a worrying way, obviously, was the Prime Minister of New Zealand is really young. I think she's about 38, something like that. Pretty young for as far as prime ministers go. She met with a prime minister of another country who was also about the same age, a woman as well. And a reporter, they were doing a shared press conference, and a reporter asked them, are you guys meeting because you're kind of the same age and have a lot in common? Or can we actually see these two countries expecting to work together? And their response was, we're not two women gossiping. Like, it was almost as if they were gossiping and meeting for lunch. And they were like, we're meeting as the prime ministers of two countries, not some woman sharing, you know, a margarita over brunch. Like, it's just the phrasing is so odd. And their response was, I don't see you asking whether Donald Trump and Boris Johnson are meeting because they're similar in age. And like, every male prime minister is about the same age as well. And, you know, it's just, this is just the language, pretty much, is what I'm trying to say, is so odd for women in politics. It's just as if they're like taking space that's not really theirs in some way, and so they can't be taken seriously.
What does this department do exactly?
This department ensures equity, progress, and wage, which is women's. Let me just tell you as soon as I find the acronym spelled out. Oh, that's what it actually stands for, is Women and Gender Equity. And so it just makes sure that there's parity in all kinds of different ways, you know, economic, personal, social.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to start gossiping about what Justin Trudeau wears to the next press conference.
Absolutely, you
should. Whether or not his tie matches his shirt the right way.
Look at his socks, SpongeBob socks.
There's this great Dove advert where they ask male athletes, like some of the biggest male athletes in the world, the same questions that they ask, that women athletes have been asked in the past. One that sticks out to me is they asked the male athlete, this is a word for word question that a female athlete had been asked, was, can you give us a little twirl and tell us about your outfit? And the guy just was like, what the hell? What are you saying to me? And it's just, once you hear it being said to a guy, you just realize how absolutely ludicrous that is to ask, like, an athlete that's just won an Olympic level game. Same vein as the everything we've been talking about.
Oh my goodness, right? But I think the thing that's even the most shocking of all is that we need that reflection back, mm-hmm. where it's happening not to the woman athlete, mm-hmm. but it's happening to the man athlete. And then it's like,
it wakes you up a little bit.
Yeah. Just those standards that we learn to live with because of the socializations and the expectations within that box that we grow up in. And it's, you know, different culturally too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy for me, you know, as a pretty privileged white woman in Canada, to have and not appreciate the level of freedom that I have. Mm-hmm. You know, when I look at other women in the world, and you know, this gender apartheid that's happening in places in the Middle East, etc. So yeah, crazy. The equality progress for women and gender equality in Canada includes 13 bilateral agreements established with provincial and territorial governments concerning gender-based violence. And so that's all of the all of the province and territories, which is amazing. I'm not sure exactly, because I haven't read all of, you know, what the bilateral agreements actually mean. But what's interesting to me and sort of striking, I just had a conversation with one of our volunteers who's helping another volunteer do a piece on student complaints. And we've got an interview that I'm trying to line up for Intravenous on non-disclosure agreements. And there's something about, you know, when an incident happens, you know, whether that's it's sexualized violence or gender-based violence or you know, that you've been marked incorrectly or, you know, discriminated against for your bad handwriting or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's this kind of lockdown on what you can and cannot talk about, and that's its own victimization,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess one of the things that I would be concerned about or wondering about in terms of these agreements that have been reached with the territories and the provinces is that there's breath for those agreements to, you know, include the health and well-being of all the parties included, and that, you know, this idea of non-disclosure agreements really kind of gets looked at for the sake of the you know, who's been victimized.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I think that something like a pattern that I've noticed a lot, especially with sexualized violence, is if, you know, the victim, you know, comes to an authority, whoever it is that they decide they want to help them, there's a bit of an attitude of, we'll help you, but don't draw attention to this. Don't speak about it in a way that's going to make this a big thing. I've seen it in universities. I've seen it in high school. I've seen it a couple times where, you know, administration and authority is made aware of like an act of sexual violence. And, you know, it's very much, oh, we're here to help you, we believe you, but let's not publicize this. Let's not make this a bigger thing than it has to be and draw other people into it. And I've heard the word make, like, drama as well. And it's just, it's a very much of a still a, we'll help you, but hush, hush. Like, this is not a public matter to be discussed. I think it's a troubling narrative that I've seen a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a troubling narrative. Anything from you, Tina, on that?
No.
In conjunction to that, 13 crisis hotline agreements with provincial and territorial governments have been agreed upon. So that's also good. Can help ensure safety amongst the civilian population in our country. the Women and Gender Equality Canada had put together a federal 2SLGBTQI plus action plan, which included some funding that if people wanted to do some action research and apply for money to study how their organization is doing in light of, you know, what the concerns or what the issues are, that they could apply for some funding. So that's good. Unfortunately, the deadline was 2 days ago, so I can't tell you to apply if you're listening from an organization. Hopefully you got the notice from another avenue and got your application in. And there was 5 calls for proposals that were launched, and like I said, one of those was for the 2SLGBTQI Community Capacity Fund, which was to help organizations build their capacity through doing research and finding out what it is that they actually needed. There was a call for proposals on the Women's Capacity Fund. Not sure what that is, but I'm assuming that, you know, when we talk about building capacity, there's different aspects to that, right? There's these different kinds of currency that build capacity. There's financial currency, there's social currency, there's you know, power currency and skills currency, and so the currencies that build women's capacity, I'm assuming, would be part of that proposal. Probably focusing on economics as the sort of wage equity is part of the important thing. I know you have to run out, Ava.
Yeah, I just have a meeting in a little bit, but it's been a pleasure being back on the show, and hopefully I'll be back in the coming weeks.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Good luck with your meeting.
Thanks so much.
This is probably a good time to just take another song break. I'm going to play a song that I was actually excited about playing a couple weeks ago, and I didn't get to it. So we're going to hear, this is called People I've Been Sad from Christine and the Queens.
Bye.
naissance contrariée par un millier de chars de mort. Marcher pieds nus sur du fer et maintenant tout est plus fort. Adolescence contrariée par un millier de remords. Maintenant quand je ressens quelque chose, tout est bien plus fort. Adolescence contrariée par un millier de chars de mort. Marcher pieds nus sur du fer et maintenant tout est plus fort. Adolescence contrariée par une solitude folle. Maintenant quand je suis dehors, le soleil me brûle encore.
The Queens with People I've Been Sad on Intravenous this morning. I love that song. Just discovered it a few weeks ago and it immediately went on the playlist for this show because there's just something about it that grabs me and holds me tight. Yeah. What did you think about it, Tina?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I think I'll check out more of their songs.
Yeah. Part of what I love about making radio sometimes is just that I get introduced to things that I wouldn't normally gravitate to, you know? And that goes for songs and ideas here. And we're talking today a little bit about the newsletter and the report that touts the Women and Gender Equality Canada's sort of milestones in 2023, and one of the things that they called for is proposals for the Menstrual Equity Fund, and this real push to end what has been classified or coined as period poverty. And, you know, I was kind of surprised to read this statistic on their website where 1 in 5 Canadians who menstruate say that they may not be able to afford period products at some point in the next 12 months.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, you know?
But they are very expensive these days now, the menstrual products.
Right.
Yeah.
I do believe they've taken the tax off them, though, right?
Oh, they have?
Oh, I don't know.
I didn't know about that.
I'm post needing them. So,
I'm jealous of you.
Right? Your time will come. So I don't really keep up on what's happening out there with them, but seems to me that something changed in the last little while, and I thought it was that they were Well, they have to be available. They have to be available in all federally regulated workplaces, washrooms.
Oh,
now. So if you work in a federally regulated workplace, and you are in control of the bathrooms in your workplace, you are obliged to supply your people with menstrual products. Yeah. So that's really good. And part of, you know, the attempt to end this period poverty where, you know, when you can't afford these things, you know, or you're sacrificing one thing for another thing, or, you know, you're not able to afford what you need in terms of protection, then maybe you can't go to work, or maybe you can't go to school. And so it affects all kinds of other areas of your life. And this menstrual equity fund pilot is hoping to address the barriers that are related to affordability and stigma that some Canadians face when accessing menstrual products. And so they've partnered with Food Banks Canada, as well as several organizations that are grassroots, to figure out what the next steps are. But I know the United Way here in the Lower Mainland, they often have menstrual product drives, period poverty drives.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Where they collect, you know, pads and tampons and
like unwanted.
Like freshly purchased boxes of pads, and I mean, I guess you could donate individually wrapped ones that hadn't been opened if you've got a box that, you know, isn't used anymore. But, you know, perhaps you should also keep those under your counter in case you have a guest who needs them in a pinch.
Period poverty.
Who has, well, not even period poverty, but, you know, those of us who have, you know, been in the menstrual cycle, we know that it can just come on in a flash, and sometimes we're not prepared, right?
Yes, I've definitely had those moments.
Yeah. And so it's handy to, you know, have a friend who has a little stash under their bathroom cupboard.
Or in their backpacks.
Or in their backpack. Yeah, indeed. So some good work happening with Equality Canada, and glad to see that some of these milestones are being matched, that their work is progressing and moving forward, because as we started this conversation today, it obviously is not where it needs to be for the well-being of all the genders.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for coming in, Tina, and chiming in on the conversation. Next week will be a podcast with the STEM folks from SFU. And then there'll be a few pre-recorded shows that you want to tune into for Intravenous. Stay tuned. Democracy Now! Is coming right up.